enough to control your brain, control your life. I'm Louis Gatzbucher, and I'm not live on there. I was ready to broadcast, however, there was a gremlin once more in the system, and I couldn't broadcast. So what you're hearing now is recorded and put on my website as well as on in the archive of Blog Talk Radio. However, visit my website http://www.mindmattersonline.info. Mind Matters Online is one word. And I would like to give me your comments on this series, if you like it or if you don't like it, and give me all the suggestions and ask me any questions you want, and I will answer them within 24 hours. And as you know, on my website you will find recordings of all my radio programs for you to listen to at your leisure. Last week I spoke about identity, the self, about self-actualization, and I had planned to speak also about self-actualization and leadership. But I had miscalculated the length of my talk, and then, of course, I ran out of time. So I will begin this show with self-actualization and leadership. I will continue with the leadership theme, and in the same context, I will also talk about communication and emotional intelligence. So, as I said, let us begin with self-actualization and leadership. What are the traps that typically sabotage leaders and prevent them from becoming full self-actualizing leaders? What are the traps that catch and defeat and undermine leaders from becoming self-actualizing leaders? What thought viruses infect leaders so that they get stuck at a particular level of leadership and do not develop fully a self-actualizing leaders? Well, there is the power trap. And self-actualization is not about getting power, but using it and empowering others as you help them find their basic personality powers and developing them fully. And so the goal of self-actualizing leaders is not to gain power, but to push power and decision-making down to the touch points of a business. This means giving up power and giving up control and ceding it to others. Self-actualizing power is not power over others, it is power with others and power through others. The joy of such a leader is in seeing people grow, develop, find their talents, express them, and excel. But of course, that requires maturity and a secure sense of self. Those who are insecure can't do that, and those whose ego is ill-formed and always in the way can't do that either. Those who are insecurely competitive cannot do that, because it takes a mature leader who is him or herself living a self-actualizing life. A fearful leader cannot do it. The fearful or paranoid leader who thinks, if you give your power away, the employees will take over, will not be able to support the development of others and groom others to become leaders. Then there is the ego trap. The distortion of toxic leadership is best seen in the so-called leader who is self-absorbed, who is driven solely by self-interest, who misunderstands and thinks that leadership is about them, their brilliance, their charm, their charisma, who acts like a prima donna and wants to get his or her way regardless of anything or anybody. But leadership is not about the leader. It is about the vision. It is about the people who are enriched and benefited by the vision and by the mission. It is about the value that the leader can give. The self-focused leader thinks that leadership means having people serve them instead of the privilege of them serving people. This leads to dictatorial leadership, to leaders becoming little demigods, to leaders abusing people and using them for their own self-aggrandizement. The radical paradigm shift regarding as a self-actualizing leader is that the ego has to be completely out of the way. The leader leads to a desired outcome or experience by activating the power of his or her people for the purpose of a group success. For example, in creating and giving value that creates monetary value in a society. Again, we see the importance of the leader's own self-actualization and personal development. Without that, the leader is a dangerous wild card, likely to use people for his or her own agendas. There is also the time trap or the speed trap. This is a trap of being busy, 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 too busy. It's an occupational hazard for high performers, for intelligent, creative people and people of vision. We take on too much. We fill our calendars and desks, and then we prioritize between all the things that drive up our stress and makes us, in the end, ineffective, indecisive, and incapable of healthy reflection. As a result, leaders tend to fall back on taking back power and control. They say they have given to people, but in a rush to get things done, they use command and control methods and consequently disempower those below them. As a result, they rush around in their business and fail to bring many things to completion or closure. As a result, they listen with half an ear, cut people off, and leave conversations hanging. As a result, their stress level rises, and they have less and less time to step back, to refresh the big picture, and keep the vision before themselves and their company or business. All of that prevents self-actualization in both individuals and organizations. Self-actualizing leaders prioritize, make hard decisions between good choices and great ones, saying no to the good choices so that they can say yes to the great ones. And they control their context so that they can maintain a calm, reflective mind about the choices that they make. There are many other traps, but these three are some of the biggest traps to watch for. If you are a leader or chief executive officer, a senior manager, or an entrepreneur in your own business, or if you train and coach leaders, developing self-actualizing leaders means also to identify the traps so that they can be avoided. And how do we do that? By facilitating the unleashing of potentials in people that they can self-actualize. Leadership is a complex subject. There are visionary leaders, empowering leaders, charismatic leaders, and values-based leaders. For each of these styles, there are situations where that style is and is not effective. However, the one thing that traditional leaders can usually rely on, regardless of their style or situation, is legitimate power. When things get tough, a traditional leader has the status and the position to demand how work is done. But when you are in charge of a team of your peers, your level of authority is often non-existent. You might have a little status as a person to whom the work has been given, or you have assumed control, but is that enough to lead what is essentially a collaboration? To lead a peer group, you must have all the characteristics of great leaders, and then some. Here are the key skills you will need to succeed. First, you need to master the group process. You need to learn to lead discussions and proactively manage different personalities. You never know what past experience good and bad team members have had with one another. Whatever the history, your role as a leader starts by setting a positive foundation for the team's interactions. To do that, you need to establish a relaxed environment where everyone is encouraged to share opinions and ideas. You also need to ask for input from everyone and encourage quieter members to speak up. It is very important to use active listening skills like paraphrasing and asking questions for clarification. This is something I spoke about in previous shows. You also need to insist on respect for one another. Second, empower team members. Leaders who give power to others can be very influential and motivating. When you empower someone, you are essentially saying that you trust that person. When people feel trusted, they may naturally want to take on more responsibility for the outcome because they'll share in the spotlight when success is achieved. Empowerment is a great motivator, and it can be used to recognize the efforts of team members. When leading your peers, be creative with reward and recognition. Sometimes assigning a task or granting a level of authority can serve as a very effective reward. Beyond this, motivate the people you are working with and, in particular, give praise wherever it is due. Third, be flexible. Rules, regulations, and a heavy-handed approach can cause resentment. Use discretion and learn to adapt to the changing environment. You won't always be the expert, and you won't always know what to do. With a flexible leadership style, you can often deal with changing circumstances without compromising your leadership role. If you rely on a rigid structure and style, you may find yourself challenged often, and you may waste your energy fighting interpersonal battles instead of accomplishing your goals. Fourth, talking about goals, set goals. In past programs, I have emphasized the importance of goal setting. When you bring together a diverse set of people, having a clear direction is even more important. Clear goals for each of the members of your group are essential to avoid conflict. Fifth, be willing to take responsibility. I talked about self-responsibility in a previous program. In the context of leadership, you not only are responsible for your own action, but you are responsible for the action of the whole group that you are leading. Remember, the puck stops always with you. For this, you need also my sixth key, mental toughness. No one can lead without being criticized or without facing discouragement. A potential leader needs mental toughness. Leadership creates a certain separation from one's peers. The separation comes from carrying responsibilities that only you can carry. This can lead to a feeling of loneliness. Accept it and change its meaning, about which I also spoke previously. Good leadership requires also emotional intelligence, a psychological theory, and there are five components of emotional intelligence, and they are, first, self-awareness. This is the ability to recognize and to understand personal moods and emotions and drives, as well as their effect on others. Self-awareness includes self-confidence, realistic self-assessment, and perhaps also a self-deprecating sense of humor. Self-awareness depends on our ability to monitor our own emotion state and to correctly identify and name our emotions. There's also self-regulation. This is the ability to control or redirect disruptive impulses and moods and the propensity to suspend judgment and to think before acting. Hallmarks of self-regulation include trustworthiness and integrity, comfort with ambiguity, and openness to change. Internal motivation is another component. It means a passion to work for internal reasons, that go beyond money and status, which are external rewards, such as an inner vision of what is important in life, a joy in doing something, curiosity in learning, a flow that comes with being immersed in an activity, a propensity to pursue goals with energy and persistence. Internal motivation includes also a strong drive to achieve, optimism even in the face of failure, and organizational commitment. The fourth component is empathy. This is the ability to understand the emotional makeup of other people, a skill in treating people according to their emotional reaction. It means expertise in building and retaining talent, cross-cultural sensitivity, and service to clients or customers. In an educational context, empathy often includes or leads to sympathy, which implies concern or a care or a wish to soften negative emotions or experiences in others. But it is important to note that empathy does not necessarily imply compassion. Empathy can be used for compassionate as well as cruel behavior. Finally, there are social skills, such as proficiency in managing relationships and building networks, and the ability to find common ground and build rapport. It means effectiveness in leading change, persuasiveness, and expertise in building and leading teams. For leaders, having emotional intelligence is essential for success. After all, who is more likely to succeed? A leader who shouts at his team when he is under stress, or a leader who stays in control and calmly assesses the situation? The more that the leader manages each of these components, the higher is his or her emotional intelligence. So let us look at each element in more detail. And let us talk about self-awareness. If you are self-aware, you always know how you feel, and you know how your emotions and your actions can affect people around you. Being self-aware when you are in a leadership position also means having a clear picture of your strengths and also of your weaknesses. And it also means having humility. So, what can you do to improve your self-awareness? Keep a journal. Journal helps improve your self-awareness. If you spend just a few minutes each day writing down your thoughts, this can move you to a higher degree of self-awareness. Slow down. When you experience anger or other strong emotions, slow down to examine why. Remember, no matter what the situation, you can always choose how to react to it. Observe yourself at all times. Be aware of your posture, of your facial expression, and most importantly, be aware of your thoughts, always, simply always. Self-regulation means that leaders who regulate themselves effectively rarely verbally attack others, make rushed or emotional decisions, knee-jerk reactions, stereotype people, or compromise their values. Self-regulation is all about staying in control. This element of emotional intelligence covers a leader's flexibility and commitment to personal accountability. So, how can you improve your abilities to self-regulate? Know your values. Do you have a clear idea of where you absolutely will not compromise? Do you know what values are most important to you? Spend some time examining your own code of ethics. If you know what's most important to you, then you probably won't have to think twice when you face a moral or ethical decision. You will make the right choice. Hold yourself accountable. If you tend to blame others when something goes wrong, stop. Make a commitment to admit to your mistakes and face the consequences, whatever they are. You'll probably sleep better at night, and you'll quickly earn the respect of those around you. Practice being calm. The next time you are in a challenging situation, be very aware of how you act. Do you relieve your stress by shouting at someone else? Practice deep breathing exercises to calm yourself. Also write down all of the negative things you want to say, and then rip it up and throw it away. Expressing these emotions on paper and not showing them to anyone is better than speaking them aloud to your team. What's more, this helps you challenge your reactions to make sure that they are fair. Let us speak about motivation. Self-motivated leaders consistently work towards their goals, and they have extremely high standards for the quality of their work. How can you improve your motivation? Re-examine what your work or your project means to you. It is easy to forget what you really love about it. So take some time to remember why you do it. Starting at the root often helps you look at your situation in a new way and to give it a new meaning or to remember the meaning that you once gave it. Make sure that your goal statements are fresh and energizing. I spoke about goal setting in a previous show. Know where you stand. Determine how motivated you are to lead. If you need to increase your motivation to lead, visualize, affirm, and create meaning. If need be, load your perception of the task at hand with plenty of meaning. Be hopeful and find something good. Motivated leaders are usually optimistic, no matter what they face. Adopting this mindset might take practice, but it is well worth the effort. Every time you face a challenge or even a failure, try to find at least one good thing about the situation. It might be something very small, like a new contact or something with long-term effects, like an important lesson learned. But there's almost always something positive. You just have to look for it. My fourth component of emotional intelligence was empathy. For leaders, having empathy is critical to managing a successful team or organization. Leaders with empathy have the ability to put themselves into someone else's situation. They help develop the people on their team, challenge others who are acting unfairly, give constructive feedback, and listen to those who need it. If you want to earn the respect and the loyalty of your team, then show them you care by being empathic. How can you improve your empathy? Well, put yourself in someone else's position. It is easy to support your own point of view. After all, it is yours. But take the time to look at the situation from other people's perspectives. Pay attention to body language. I've said so before. Perhaps when you listen to someone, you cross your arms, move your feet back and forth, or bite your lips. This body language tells others how you really feel about a situation, and the message that you are giving is not positive. Learning to read body language can be a real asset when you are in a leadership role, because you will be better able to determine how someone truly feels. And this gives you the opportunity to respond appropriately. Respond to feelings. You ask your assistant to work late again, and although he agrees, you can hear the disappointment in his voice. So respond by addressing his feelings. Tell him you appreciate how willing he is to work extra hours and you're just as frustrated about working late. If possible, figure out a way for future late nights to be less of an issue. Finally, social skills. Leaders who do well in this element of emotional intelligence are great communicators. They are just as open to hearing bad news as good news, and they are experts at getting their team to support them and to be excited about a new mission or project. Leaders who have good social skills are also good at managing change and resolving conflicts diplomatically. They are rarely satisfied with leaving things as they are, but they are also not willing to make everyone else do the work. They set the example with their own behavior. So, how can you improve your leadership by building social skills? Learn conflict resolution. Leaders must know how to resolve conflicts between the team members or customers or vendors. Learning conflict resolution skills is vital if you want to succeed as a leader. Improve your communication skills. How well do you communicate? I talked about communication in other programs, and I will come back to it in a few seconds. Learn how to praise others. As a leader, you can inspire the loyalty of your team simply by giving praise when it's earned. Learning how to effectively praise others is a fine art, but very well worth the effort. Thanks to the many challenges and opportunities that arise when working with others, leaders must have a solid understanding of how their emotions and actions affect the people around them. The better a leader relates to and works with others, the more successful he or she will be. Take the time to work on self-awareness, on self-regulation, on motivation, on empathy, and social skills. Working on this will help you excel in the future. I take a bit break to have a sip of water. Sorry about that. Back again. Now let us talk about leadership and communication. Effective leaders know, one, what they want to accomplish, two, what communication skills are needed to reach their goals, and three, how to implement them. A leader must be able to communicate effectively. When senior executives in all industries, in all countries are asked to list the most important skills a manager must possess, the answer consistently includes good communication skills. Managers, leaders, spend most of the day engaged in communication. In fact, older studies of how much time managers spend on various activities show that communication occupies 70 to 90% of their time every day. Now, with cell phones, email, text messaging, if that same study were done today, I am sure it would yield even higher percentages. The sheer amount of time managers and leaders spend communicating shows how important strong communication skills are. Mastering leadership communication should be a priority for people wanting to be considered as leaders. It is simply impossible to become a great leader without being a good communicator. Being a great communicator does not mean being a great talker. Big, very big difference. The key to becoming a skillful communicator is rarely found in what has been taught in the world of academia. From our earliest days in the classroom, we are trained to focus on enunciation, vocabulary, presence, delivery, grammar, syntax, and the like. In other words, we are taught to focus on ourselves. While I do not mean to belittle these things, as they are important to learn, it is the more subtle elements of communications rarely taught in the classroom, the elements that focus on others, which leaders desperately need to learn. It is the ability to develop a keen external awareness that separates a truly great communicator from those who muddle through the interaction with others. Examine the world's greatest leaders and you'll find them all to be exceptional communicators. They might talk about their ideas, but they do so in a way which also speaks to your emotions and your aspirations. They realize if their message does not take deep root with the audience, then it won't be understood and much less championed. I do not believe it comes as any great surprise that most leaders spend the overwhelming majority of their time each day in some type of an interpersonal situation. I also do not believe it comes as a great shock that a large number of organizational problems occur as a result of poor communication. This underscores the need for leaders to focus on becoming at least good, if not excellent, communicators. Effective communication is an essential component of professional success, whether it is at the interpersonal, intergroup, intragroup, organizational or external level. While developing an understanding of great communication skills is easier than one might think, being able to appropriately draw upon the skills when the chips are down is not always as easy as one might hope for. Skills acquired and knowledge gained is only valuable to the extent they can be practically applied when called for. The number one thing great communicators have in common is that they possess a heightened sense of situational and contextual awareness. The best communicators are great listeners and very astute in their observations. Great communicators are skilled at reading a person or a group by sensing the moods, the dynamics, the attitudes, the values, and concerns of those being communicated with. Not only do they read their environment well, but they possess the uncanny ability to adapt the message to that environment without missing a beat. The message is not about the messenger. It has nothing to do with the messenger. It is, however, 100% about meeting the needs and the expectations of those you are communicating with. So, how do you know when your skills have matured to the point that you have become an excellent communicator? The answer is, you will have reached the point where your interaction with the others consistently use the following 10 principles. 1. Be honest. In most cases, people just won't open up to those they do not trust. When people have a sense a leader is worthy of their trust, they will invest time and take risks in ways they never would if the leader had a reputation built upon poor character or lack of integrity. While you can attempt to demand trust, it rarely works, if at all. Trust is best created by earning it with right acting, right thinking, and making decisions. Keep in mind, people will forgive many things where trust exists, but will rarely forgive anything where trust is absent. Second, get personal. There's great truth in the following axiom. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Classic business theory tells leaders to stay at arm's length. I say, stay at arm's length if you want to remain in the dark, receiving only highly sanitized versions of the truth. If you do not develop meaningful relationships with people, you will never know what is really on their mind until it's too late to do anything about it. Third, get specific. Learn to communicate with clarity. Simple and concise is always better than complicated and confusing. Time has never been more precious than it is today. It is critical how leaders learn how to cut to the chase and hit the high points. It is also important to expect the same from others. Without understanding the value of brevity and clarity, it is unlikely you will be afforded the opportunity to get to the granular level as people will tune you out long before you get there. Your goal is to weed out the superfluous and to make your words count. Fourth, focus on giving. The best communicators are not only skilled at learning and gathering information while communicating, they are also adept at transferring ideas, aligning expectations, inspiring action, and spreading their vision. The key is to approach each interaction with a servant's heart. When you truly focus on contributing more than receiving, you will have accomplished the goal. Even though this may seem counterintuitive, by intensely focusing on your conversation partner's wants and needs, you will learn far more than ever would by focusing on your own agenda. Fifth, have an open mind. The rigidity of a closed mind is the single greatest limiting factor of new opportunities. Leaders take their game to a whole new level the minute they willingly seek out those who hold dissenting opinions and opposing positions with the goal of not convincing them to change their minds, but with the goal of understanding what's on their mind. I'm always amazed at how many people are truly fearful of opposing views when what they should be is genuinely curious and interested. Open dialogues with those who confront you, challenge you, stretch you, and develop you. Remember that it's not the opinion that matters, but rather the willingness to discuss it with an open mind and to learn from it. 6. Shut up and listen. Simply broadcasting your message and repeating it and repeating it and repeating it again and again and again will not have the same result as engaging in meaningful conversation. But this assumes that you understand that the greatest form of discourse takes place within a conversation and not in a lecture or a monologue. When you reach that point in your life that you begin to understand that knowledge is not gained by flapping your lips, but by listening carefully, you have taken the first step to becoming a skilled communicator. 7th, replace ego with empathy. When candor is communicated with empathy and caring, and not the prideful arrogance of an overly inflated ego, good things begin to happen. Empathetic communicators display a level of authenticity and transparency that is not present with those who choose to communicate behind the carefully crafted facade propped up by a very fragile ego. Understanding this communication principle is what helps turn anger into respect and doubt into trust. 8th, read between the lines. Leaders have the ability to understand what is not said, not witnessed, not heard. Being a leader should not be viewed as a license to increase the volume of rhetoric. Leaders know that there is far more to be gained by surrendering the floor than by filibustering. In this age of instant communication, everyone seems to be in such a rush to communicate what's on their mind that they fail to realize everything that can be gained from the minds of others. Keep your eyes and ears open and your mouth shut, and you will be amazed at how your level or organizational awareness is raised. 9th, know what you're talking about. Develop a technical command over your subject matter. If you do not possess subject matter expertise, very few people will give you the time of the day. Most successful people have little interest in listening to those individuals who cannot add value to a situation or to a topic, but force themselves into a conversation just to hear themselves speak. The fake it until you make it days have long since passed, and for most people I know, fast and slick equals not credible. You have all heard the saying, it's not what you say, but how you say it that matters. And there is surely an element of truth in that statement, but it's only sometimes true. In reality, it also matters very much what you say. Good communicators address both the what and how aspects of messaging, so they do not fall prey to becoming this smooth talker who leaves people with the impression of form over substance. 10th, be prepared to change the message if needed. Another component of communication strategy that is rarely discussed is how to prevent a message from going bad, and what to do when it happens. It is called being prepared and developing a contingency plan, a plan B. Again, you must keep in mind that for successful interactions to occur, your objective must be in alignment with those you are communicating with. If your expertise, your empathy, your clarity, and so on, does not have the desired effect, you need to be able to make an impact by changing things on the fly. Use great questions, use humor, stories, analogies, relevant data, and where needed, bold statements to help connect and engender the confidence and trust that it takes for people to want to engage. Do not assume someone is ready to have a particular conversation with you just because you are ready to have the conversation with them. Spending time paving the way for a productive conversation is far better than coming off as a proverbial bull in a china store. Furthermore, you cannot assume anyone knows where you are coming from if you don't tell them. I'm often amazed at how many people assume everyone knows what they want to make happen without ever finding it necessary to communicate your objective. If you fail to justify your message with knowledge and business logic, with reason and empathy, you will find that this message will likely fall on deaf ears. Bottom line is, whenever you have a message to communicate, either directly or indirectly through a third party, make sure that the message is true and correct, well-reasoned, and substantiated by a solid logic that is specific, consistent, clear, and accurate. Spending a little extra time on the front end of the messaging curve could save you from considerable aggravation and brain damage on the back end. Most importantly of all, keep in mind that communication is not about you, your opinions, your positions, or your circumstances. It is about helping others by meeting their needs, understanding their concerns, and adding value to their world. Do these things and you will drastically reduce the number of potential communication problems. Well, I've come to the end of this show. Thank you for listening. This being the first show in 2013, I wish you again all the success that you deserve. And most importantly, I wish you lots of fun and happiness. Please go to my website, mindmattersonline.info. Mind Matters Online is one word. There you will find my email address, and I really would love to hear from you. Let me know what you think about my program. Let me know what you want me to talk about. Ask me any questions that you like, and if you want to share a problem with me, I'm happy to engage with it and give you my best advice. On my website, you will find recordings of all my previous shows for you to listen to at your convenience. And for now, I leave you with wise words by Donald H. McGannon, and I quote, "Leadership is action and not position," unquote. Tune in again next week, same day, same time. Goodbye.